So what happens in a prenup is the non-moneyed spouse or the spouse that's giving up the career to stay home to raise the children will be afforded protections, financial protections, should the marriage break up, because they will be giving up a lot.
Yeah.
Because maybe you are marrying a famous person or someone who travels, so you can no longer have that career that you had, that you've been looking to strive for, let's say. Or maybe they want five children and you're willing to give them five children. So it's not going to leave you out in the cold, and you're not going to get 50% of the wealth they've already built. But for the time that you're married, it will define a certain amount that you will be assured to get should you then divorce.
Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Leslie Montanilli, on the Tour for Dish It podcast. I'm your host, Angie. If you like the show, don't forget to tell a friend, give it a 5-star rating, leave a review. You can also subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Radio FM, Amazon Music, or wherever you're listening to it right now. The more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover the show. And that helps me in return. So that just makes me really excited. So today on this episode, we have Leslie on, who's a divorce lawyer, relationship coach, and an author. And we discuss how to not let cynicism ruin your chances at love and all the things that you need to know when it comes to prenups, postnups, and settlements. I hope you enjoy it. This is a really, really lovely episode because this is someone who's been a divorce lawyer for 30 years, okay? She's been a divorce lawyer for 30 years. Not only is she still married, she still believes in love. So, without further ado, please help me give a big warm welcome to Leslie. Let's begin. Welcome, Leslie. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Angie, for having me today. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I'm really, really glad to have you on the podcast because, a few things. I've always been really curious as to how divorce lawyers don't get all disheartened about love. I mean, I would be so cynical. I mean, I got cynical at 18, so I don't even know how people do it, you know. So I wanted to have you on because you're a divorce lawyer who talks about love, and I really love what I read about you and hearing you speak and stuff. And so I'm really intrigued to hear your side of things and how you, I guess, how you process it and how you see it, and also share some of your insights with us, because obviously, you've been in that business for a while, so you know your stuff, and I just really want to share that, with the audience. So before we dive in, Leslie, I would love for you to please introduce yourself, where you live, and what you do.
Hi, everyone. I'm Leslie Montanil. I am a modern matrimonial lawyer, a relationship coach, and an author. I live in Westchester County, New York, in the United States, and I help people find their way in their relationships, through their relationships, and out of their relationships.
Like the whole process.
The whole process.
And actually, I got a question already from what you said, because now that when you said matrimonial lawyer, I remember I saw that and I Googled it and I just presumed that was divorce lawyer. Did I maybe misunderstand that?
Oh, no, you did not misunderstand. Matrimonial lawyers are divorce lawyers. It's just actually a much nicer name and well received when you're out in public, as opposed to using the dangerous D word of divorce. That most people cringe when they hear that word. And rightfully so, because that word divorce does trigger a lot of emotions in almost everyone.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, can I ask you if you're married?
I am married. I am married to my husband 24 years.
Wow.
And I will tell you that we did meet and we were married within 4 months.
Oh my God. Okay. Oh, okay. Right. So many questions. Okay. Right. So, okay. How do you, do you mind if I say divorce lawyer? Because matrimony, or maybe I can say
not at all. Matrimonial. Please.
Yeah. And because as a divorce lawyer, you are also a coach for relationship. And how do you merge those two areas? And personally also with your love life, like how do you do that job and still be married and still help others with their relationship?
So for me, I feel that if you want to be in love and have love, you have to find your way around being cynical. If you allow the cynicism in, it kind of robs you of that opportunity because it brings a lot of doubt and fear in. And I believe that everyone wants a human connection, and I believe everyone wants love. And that doesn't mean everyone is suited for marriage, which is okay. But allowing that negative, cynical energy to take you over because of bad experiences really takes a lot away from your own life and your own evolution as you grow and get older and develop more in yourself and with the person that you love or the person you're looking to love. That's maybe a person you haven't met yet. So I feel that for me, you brought up a very good point. How do I match being a divorce lawyer with being a relationship coach? Well, that's something that has evolved over the course of my career. I've been a divorce lawyer for almost 30 years. So in the last 5 years, I've worked on becoming a relationship coach and also a mediator for people who don't want to take the typical divorce route. And the reason is I found in my practice that I was always coaching the person who came to me into helping them grow into what they would see their future being as opposed to where they were when they came into my office. Because more often than not, it would be a woman who would come in who had given up almost everything to raise a family, you know, be the stay-at-home parent, which we now call the primary caregiver. And they were broken because the relationship was broken, but really they were broken inside because they had lost their way as to who they were because they were giving up so much of themselves to be the good stay-at-home parent, be the good wife, be the good primary partner. And a lot of these people gave up careers, and once they had one child or two children, they couldn't find their way back to those dreams they had when they were younger. So I found myself coaching my clients into really digging deep into their selves to figure out what was making them truly unhappy about their own life and their own being. Mm. And by doing that, they started to really come alive again and realize that, you know, maybe the relationship at the end of all this exercise would end anyway, but they started to turn the focus on themselves and how could they rebuild what they felt that they lost within themselves. And by taking the focus off your partner, you also take your focus off the negativity related to your partner. By rebuilding what you need to fulfill yourself, a lot of these people found that maybe they didn't want that relationship to end anymore because they refound what they had lost long ago because they gave up a lot.
Yeah.
I've transitioned more into coaching and helping others help themselves so that they could find true love and keep love in their life as opposed to always looking at the what ifs, the doubts.
Yeah, and what ifs aren't real. You know, you cannot, a what if scenario is not something you can actually even, like those things are, they're almost mute because, they, you know, we all go thinking, oh my God, what if I had, you know, pursued this career or that path or, you know, not broken up with X or, you know, whatever it is. But what ifs don't, things happen the way they did because you made a decision and the alternative would require us to go back in time. But there's always that, you know, there's nostalgia, maybe the regret that maybe people go down that route. But I was just, when I was listening to you, I made some notes and I was just like, I wrote down, you know, growth, because you mentioned something about, you know, with growth, and it's true when you are in a relationship or when you work on yourself because you want to maybe, you know, patch yourself up after a painful breakup or divorce, it all is growth. So there's always a payoff at the end, but the growth is really painful. And I think you said something that was really interesting, is that you were helping those ladies that came to you to focus back on themselves. Like, what is it that they, you know, were missing in their lives? And I find that it's really easy to lose myself when I am in a relationship. Like, you know, especially, like, you know, I have noticed that in the past that I have done that, and that created dissatisfaction. And then you end up, like, you know, not being whole anymore. The person doesn't know what they felt. You know, you're not the same person, but not in a good way, you know? And right. It's like, and then you're not satisfied. You're resenting them as well, and that you sort of, you know, prioritize them. And yeah, it's like that thing about looking after number one in a way that's actually helpful for the couple.
I couldn't agree with you more. I feel that it's important to know that, first of all, relationships, they also grow and change. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a relationship and you think it's going to stay the same as when you first met, then you're going to be in for maybe a bumpy ride, because the whole idea is for there to be growth for both individuals, to be able to share that growth. But being self-fulfilled, I think, is very, very important. Because if you are not fulfilled, then you might have a partner who you believe is going to complete that circle for you. And then you're with them, and then you talk about dissatisfaction. Because I think a lot of young couples today find that they're on this road, they have a career in mind, they have a goal in mind, and they meet someone, and sometimes they think that someone is going to be like close the circle and fulfill that last piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. And resolve all their issues as well. Like, you know, they think they're going to fix them, and, you know, it's all going to be hunky-dory.
Right. And then they realize it doesn't, and then they're dissatisfied. And maybe disappointed is a good word to use here. And I think it's really important for all couples and all individuals out there looking for love to really understand that when you get together with someone, the attraction is immediate. I mean, that's the beginning. And then you like something about that other person, and they like something about you. And then maybe you have common goals, and you like the same kind of activities, and you start to build this world together. But if you meet someone at 25, they're going to be different at 45.
Well, especially when you're very young, because obviously you've been married for 24 years, and you were married after 4 months. So you didn't even know really who you were getting married to, right?
I did not.
You know, unless you were a neighbor with him. And even then, do we even know our neighbors when we live? I mean, I live in a big city. So, I mean, I know my neighbors, but I don't know them, you know, like as your friend.
But in all fairness, I had dated a lot of toads before that. I've had a lot of relationships before that. And, you know, I wasn't really sure if I really was going to get married. Not that I didn't have an opportunity prior to marrying my husband, because I did, but it never felt right.
Right.
So it's you know, I got married a little older, in my early 30s. And when I met Joe, that's my husband, it was just, we just knew. We both had been in other relationships. We weren't, when we met, we were both out of relationships. So I think that's important too. I think that if you're in a relationship, you can't start another one with someone else. Mm-hmm. I think you have to end what you're in and not be afraid to be on your own, because you will find someone. But when we met, it was just, we just knew. We were both lawyers. We both...
You were both with other people at the time?
No, we were not.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I think it's really important that when you're out there dating, which I think is a great thing, because when you're dating, you never know. You might meet your forever after. But if you're in a relationship, don't start a new one until you end the old one.
Yeah, you need to. But not everyone, I mean, yeah. I mean, I know people who don't. And I don't know how they do it. But for me, I feel like I would never heal properly if I didn't have that grieving period.
And
If it was anything meaningful, I mean, you know.
Right, if it was anything meaningful. But you cannot really get to know. And I'm not talking about, and I know we're veering away a little, but I'm not really talking about like, oh, you're just dating, you know, you're not really with someone specifically.
Oh, yeah, no, you should definitely date several people at a time. Right. This is what you learn as well when you go for job interviews. Go to several job interviews, and even if you think there's enough on the table, keep interviewing, because things can shift and you just don't even know if you're making an informed decision. Maybe someone else is going to give you a great, great health package and income protection. The first one is like, nah, we'll just give you, you know, basic pension scheme. And, you know, you just don't know. Like, you've got to look around. And that's what I'm learning with when I go for job interviews. I'm like, well, I should definitely be dating this way as well. This is much better.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. So the truth is, Joe and I met and we just were on the same page. Sometimes timing has everything to do with it. And we just made a decision and we just jumped in and we got married. And I always like to say, I married my husband in 4 months, but I spent the first 5 years of our marriage dating him.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, yes. We do getting to know each other.
And it was great. But we, you know, learned a lot about each other that we didn't know when we decided to say I do.
What made you say I do though? Like, do you think you'd do the same today? Like, or maybe like with time now, you know, like with experience, you'd be like, oh, let me date him for a bit longer. Or like, what was it? Do you think it was part, like, you know, being younger, like the youth, like new eyes, even though you'd already had relationships, but what do you think made you say yes?
I just knew that Joe was the right companion and partner for me. And I knew that there was something that was unspoken between us, that we were both in it. Mm-hmm. I just feel like we were both committed and we were going to take a chance. We were both kind of risk takers. I mean, I'm in my own business, you know, kind of thing. Like, I took a chance on myself. And I feel that he felt he didn't want to miss out on what we were sharing was so special. We just decided to tie the knot. It just was the next logical step. And, you know, that was 24 years ago. Today, that's not the case for a lot of couples when they get together. They don't, they take a lot longer to make that decision. And I can understand that, you know, a lot's changed in the world in 24 years.
Mm. Okay, so I'm just stepping out of the episode for a minute. If you like what I'm doing and you want to have your own podcast too, I actually teach this stuff and I absolutely love doing it because podcasting has been such an incredible experience for me. My favorite parts have been being able to just be myself, connecting with fascinating guests from all walks of life, connecting with you as well, you know, engaging with you. It has been really an amazing experience. And so I am beyond excited to be able to help you create your own mark in the world through podcasting by showing you how to do it. So to get the details on how to sign up, just go to learnpodcasting.online. I will add the link in the show notes and I really hope to see you there. So now back onto the episode. Yeah, you know, I wanted to sort of like refer back to some of the things you said earlier. And I wonder if, you know, all the experience that you had, you know, going through the divorcing process with other couples, if that almost sort of worked as a warning sign as what not to do and to make sure you didn't do that yourself, like you kind of, maybe that's what stopped you being cynical, because you sort of like learned from that, or am I assuming wrong?
No, you're not. I think that having been exposed to some of the darkest sides of human nature, of people in love and hate with each other, really made me take a step back and reevaluate maybe how I might be feeling at a certain time, or become more patient with my significant other, and more patient with my relationship, and really start to understand what was petty. I mean, I literally have had people fight over a music library, like an iPod. Yes. I mean, I'm talking about like things you'd be like, could not really comprehend that. But what it also made me realize is that when people did things like that, it wasn't really about the thing or the item. It was about actually letting go of the relationship.
Yeah, or maybe it may be like, sometimes I feel like maybe it's a case of, you know, winning and losing. you know, especially, I guess, in a divorce, I could imagine. I've never been married nor divorced, so I don't know. But even like in relationships, couples, you know, it gets into that power struggle dynamic, which a lot of people, I think they do go through. Something that Dr. Harville and Dr. Helen speak about in their book. But it's the case of like, I think it's sometimes it could be that, but I think also another case is it can be like, I don't feel like you're letting me be myself. Or I feel like, you know, there's something else going on in the background that either they don't feel heard or they can't take space or whatever it is that they are struggling with and that person is sort of confirming to them. And so it has nothing to do with the amount of shoes or the music library on it, right. Especially an iPod, because you can just like, I mean, those are, you know, cost nothing, like, you know, the MP3s and stuff. So it's always about something else. It's like either you feel like you feel worthless, they're making you feel worthless. So you know, there's all kinds of things, right? So it's never about the armoire, basically, is what I'm saying. You know, it's never.
No, it really isn't. And yeah. I have to say, you mentioned about the power struggle and the winning and the losing.
Mm-hmm.
There are no winners in divorce.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
No one wins. Period. That's a really important thing. I want people to understand. You're not winning. If you are out there intentionally hurting a person that you committed to, you are not a winner.
Yeah, because you have to live with that for the rest of your life as well.
Correct. Right? I was just going to say, you might be very angry at the situation, and you feel by now hurting this other person, it somehow makes you better or superior. It does not. It does not. It takes away from who you really were initially. And want to say this as a caveat, when you're out there in that dating world that we were talking about, because you talked about being yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, how you feel like maybe that person's not letting you be yourself. I think it's really important to be yourself up front.
Oh yeah. And that's also, you know, when we phrase it that way, they're not letting me take space, they're not letting me be myself. It's the onus is on us, on me. Like, you know what I mean? Like that would be, like, I think there's a limit, you know. I know there's a lot of talks around, you know, with gaslighting, narcissism and all that kind of stuff. And that's a real thing. But there's also at some point, it's also, you gotta take responsibility for where you're at, how you feel, what you're letting happen, and also how unconscious we all walk around in life, not realizing maybe that something, we were letting things fly that today we wouldn't. And there's this part of like, that it takes two to tango, you know, unless someone is chaining you to the wall. You know, a lot of the things we have a lot of control of, and that's where, yeah, that's why I really like what you were saying about looking inwards, you know, the people you were coaching, you know, in your practice, that they, you have to look in, like, what do you feel is missing for you? What do you feel that in your life is missing that maybe to make you feel a bit more excited every day or challenged or at peace or, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for, we got to do it for ourselves. And I, you know, in my mind, if I could make a wish for myself, I would love to have someone who would then enhance that, because I think when you're with someone else, they will often, what I have found really exciting being with a partner was that I would discover things that I would never know, that I never even try. You know, one was like taking me up to go up to like and climb this, like, I'm going to call it a mountain. It's not a mountain. It's a very steep hill, but it's like a beautiful area in England. It's like, and it's cool. I think it's called the Peak District or Lake District. I always get it wrong. I think it's Peak District. Oh my God. I would never volunteer for something like that. I'll try to talk him out of it. I was like, are you sure you don't want to go to a spa like nearby? I was like, you're going to be driving 3 hours. You're going to be really moody. And he was like, no, we're going. I was like, okay. I was like, and then we went and I was like, it was a great experience. But things like that, that's why you have friendships, right? Because they say, oh, let's go out to dance tango. You go, what? And then, you know, oh, let's go and something. And that's the beauty of relationship. But you don't expect your friends to mend all your hurt. Nobody is owed your pain in that way. Does that make sense? Like,
yes,
you need to own, you need to fix it. And I know it's easier said than done. I know I'm still trying to like get all my stuff sorted too, but we have to be responsible for all the dynamics, really. It's really important.
I think that you really hit on a couple of really important points. Well, I love the enhance, the qualities that when you meet someone, you're in a relationship, you do things you might not otherwise do on your own. I had a similar experience. We went up to Maine, which has incredible hiking, and I looked up at this mountain. They called it Beehive, and I was like, there's no way I'm going up this. And my husband's like, yes, you are. And before he knew it, I was way ahead of him, all the way up at the top, and would not have done any of that hiking or canoeing or, you know, maybe bike ride.
Canoeing. I would be out. I'm like, no.
Right. Yeah. So I'm more of a spa girl too, just so you know. Yeah. But I wouldn't have done that. And I love that I was exposed to that, and it brought more into my life that I wouldn't otherwise have.
Yeah.
I also love when you say it takes two to tango, and I like to say it takes two to tango, two to love, and two to fight.
Absolutely.
So you have to choose really what it is you want to do. You are making a choice.
Yeah.
To love or to fight or to dance with each other. And I have to say that, and I have said this to many clients, friends, colleagues, relatives, you give your best friend a pass. Right? Your friend. And then you get into a relationship and it's the same scenario, but somehow it's not good enough.
Yeah.
And we hold our, you know, boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives to different standards than we do our best friend. Well, the person you're in the relationship with is your best friend.
Yeah.
And if you give them the same latitude that you give your, you know, best girly girlfriend that you tell all your secrets to, that you've known for a lifetime, you will find quite a difference in how your relationship evolves.
Why? Exactly. Exactly. It's like, you know, sometimes I was talking to this friend and she was being triggered by something that this guy she's dating, who, by the way, doesn't owe her anything and she doesn't owe him anything. They've only been on a few dates and he said something. And she got really triggered. And what he said was really benign. And the thing is like, it's okay to, like, you feel triggered. That's like an opportunity to go, look, okay, let me see. What is it that's really bothering me? Is it because maybe my pride or I feel embarrassed? Whatever it is, right? But often people don't mean it bad, you know, unless you are out with people who are, you know, not very nice people. But most of the time, people don't mean to be nasty. It's usually a misunderstanding. And the thing is, I said to her, okay, if one of your friends sent that to you, how would you have felt? Ah, nothing. I was like, try and use that so that you don't lash out at him next time he does say something like that, because he's going to think he can't joke with you or humor you. And the reason why I'm saying this today is because actually someone else said that to me a few years ago and said to me, you need to just watch it, like watch yourself, like observe your reaction,
right.
Have it, process it, and then also think, if this was your friend, how would you feel? And then it usually takes away that emotional charge that we have, you know, because you don't know them. Why would you expect them to be, you know, trying to upset you?
Right. And that's really a good point. And I always say the same thing. You want to like take a step back, you know, and take a pause and think about that before you react, because you can only control your behavior. You can't control someone else's. And if you've just met somebody and they're making an honest observation or they say something, I don't think anyone you meet right away has any bad intentions of trying to hurt you. There'd be nothing in it for them, you know, especially if they're trying to date you.
Right. So they're trying to win you over, to at least get in your pants, if anything. So they're going to try and be on their best behavior.
Right. So I think if you kind of put your friend in that place and say, well, if they said that to me, then of course I wouldn't be upset, you know, and give that person a pass. And, you know, sometimes people trigger us because unconsciously they remind us of someone who has hurt us in the past, or, you know, or maybe a friend or a relative or a parent or some situation. It brings up a feeling which can be valid. But don't project that feeling is intentionally being brought to you by someone who doesn't even know you.
Yeah, it's too much to expect of someone else. I mean, you're giving them way too much credit. Like, they know all your history and they'll be like, oh, I'm going to use that. No, that's going to trap him or her. And that's the thing. That's the bit about enhancing. Like, that's the bit where being with someone enhances you because you actually grow. Because when you observe your triggers and you may still fight and you argue and all of that. Yes, there's going to be a rough patches, but I believe that's part of the growth and that's what enhances you too. So the enhancement is not just good feelings. And when I say this to myself mainly because I don't know. Obviously, I haven't been great at relationships. So, so I'm trying to get better. And it's you have to really be, both wanting to have this, this to be successful or this to be carrying on for the long run. And I want to ask you, within your divorce law practice, like, what is the most unexpected that you've experienced in your career?
So the most unexpected experience I had was a woman in her 50s who had been recently diagnosed with breast cancer and was undergoing treatment, had 5 children, 13 grandchildren.
Wow.
Came from a community of people that didn't really believe in divorce. And whatever her reasons were, she wanted out. And there was a lot of money involved in the family. And the unexpected was after she had retained, which is hired our law firm, to represent her, the next day she was essentially kidnapped by her own family and hauled off in a private ambulance to a hospital to try and have her committed.
Oh my God.
So the lengths that people will go to over money.
Oh yeah.
To keep money.
Yeah.
You know, it's mind-boggling. And there was so much money that they couldn't have spent it in 5 lifetimes.
Do you think it was money or do you think it was the honor, their pride? Because in some cultures, they'll throw acid at women, like the husband or ex-husband, things like that.
In this particular case, I'm going to say it really wasn't pride. I'm going to say that there were other family members also in the same business who all had wives. And if one got away, I think that they felt that all the others would try to do the same.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to shut it down as quickly as possible. They didn't succeed.
Good, yeah.
We rescued her. We found her and rescued her. And ultimately, she went her separate way.
Had she already been committed to the hospital? Like, but before you could save her? Like, how far in the process were they?
We were able to intervene where she was supposed to be sent because of her treatments, but then had found out they had sent her somewhere else. It took a little detective work, but we had her released within 24 hours.
Wow. But imagine if she didn't have the... Let's say if she didn't have the means. So, sometimes we can have... sometimes we see like women, they could have a wealthy family or husband and so on, but they may not have access to the money. So let's say if she didn't have access to be able to pay a retainer to you and she couldn't go to anyone else, she may still be committed and medicated, right? I mean, that's like... But it goes to show, I mean, that's insanity, right? That the people would do that to her just because of money.
It's insanity. And
they should be committed.
and the reality is they had called a private ambulance and a police car had drove by and saw the private ambulance and knew it wasn't a call that was made over the airwaves, which is what would have been protocol. And they actually called it in, which is really how they got caught initially. But I like to believe in these scenarios where you go to a lawyer and ask for help, you would get help anyway, regardless of the retainer. I would like to think that humans are better than that.
Yeah.
And you would take the next step and you would figure out getting the payment later down the road.
Yeah. No, but it's good she had you.
Right. Well, and oftentimes, just so you know, when people do get a divorce, and if there's one side that has the money and the other is what we call a non-moneyed spouse, at least here, the moneyed spouse will be required to pony up the money to level the playing fields in the divorce.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, you know, the idea is we don't want families reorganized and separated and then there's one spouse on the street. We don't want that. That's, you know, we don't strive for that in this state.
Well, actually, now that you bring this up, I think that even the topic of divorce settlements, prenups, you know, getting 50-50 can be, you know, very controversial out there sometimes. Let's take the classic, very patriarchal example, right? But let's say if I meet Elon Musk tomorrow, I know who the man is. I know he's got some coins in the bank. Like, I'm not an idiot, right? So I understand that, let's say, you know, that he falls, you know, head over heels for me, obviously. Let's say if I was to marry somebody like, you know, someone of that caliber in terms of finance, right? I don't know the guy. I don't know if he's, you know, I don't know nothing about him really. But like, let's say if I was to marry somebody like that, I would totally understand that I am not entitled to half of his fortune because he's already made his fortune. I'm there for the ride. I'm having a great lifestyle. But I think like, it's more like, I guess like where it gets a bit more gray is like when you have people who, a couple, and the very cliche dated way of like, you know, of how like the woman is stay at home, she raises the children, and then 20 years later they divorce and the man gets very frustrated that she wants half of his company, she wants alimony for the kids, she wants half of the money, all of this stuff. And what I've come to realize, I used to be judgy of these women. I'm like, why half? Like, you know, he's out there, he's working. And I didn't see that actually, and now I want to see, you know, maybe there's another way to look at it, but I didn't realize that, yes, the reason why he was able to go out there, do all these business stuff and grow his business and have this beautiful wife or nice wife to take go with him to all these business corporate events, and that she was there when he come home stressed and he could talk to her. There was all these soft skills and obviously raising the children, all of that stuff. The reason why he has, let's say, $1 million in the bank is because, and the fact that he's allowed, that he has children, is because she was at home doing all of that, you know, and she was there to support him emotionally with the kids and stuff. And I was like, oh, I get it now. I get it. And I wonder if that, I mean, how you see that, but also what are the other cases of, you know, what are the things out there to think about stuff like that? Like how to, what's the whole deal with like settlement and divorce and stuff? Sorry, that's a very bad question. That's because as you can hear, I've never been married or divorced. So, but yeah.
Okay. So let me see if I can sort this out a little bit because you're definitely getting it all. You get it all. There's no doubt about it. You know, there's just, sometimes there's terminology that I guess lawyers use and people throw around a lot of words. So, when people marry someone who's already made an enormous amount of wealth, right? Oftentimes, more often than not, the Elon Musk of the world are going to present you with what's called a prenup.
Yeah.
So the misconception of the prenuptial agreement, which is an agreement that is made to set out the terms if you get a divorce. It's not about how you live when you're married. It's what will happen when you get a divorce. And a prenuptial agreement only comes alive if you walk down the aisle and say, I do. Okay? Yeah. So what happens in a prenup is the non-moneyed spouse or the spouse that's giving up the career to stay home to raise the children will be afforded protections, financial protections, should the marriage break up, because they will be giving up a lot.
Yeah.
Because maybe you are marrying a famous person or someone who travels, so you can no longer have that career that you had, that you've been looking to strive for, let's say. Or maybe they want 5 children and you're willing to give them 5 children. So it's not going to leave you out in the cold, and you're not going to get 50% of the wealth they've already built. But for the time that you're married, it will define a certain amount that you will be assured to get should you then divorce. You are giving something up for the other person and for you to sign this prenup that basically says, you can't take my money that I've already made. You know, I may get to keep, you know, 70% of what I earn. Maybe you're going to get 30. You define those terms. You know, we've agreed we're going to have children and you're going to be the stay-at-home parent. So since if we divorce, right, I'm going to make sure you're taken care of and you come up with some reasonable number. And then you kind of put that to bed. Younger couples today who don't have children, who may or may not have some wealth, but are on equal footing in their careers, also like to do prenuptials because they feel that it will give them a sense of security that everything they're working for, that they've come into the relationship with, they could walk away with should the relationship fail.
Yeah, and I can understand that. I mean, I'd be happy to, like, you know, to sign a prenup if it means that, because I think, like, you see when people get a divorce, it's so emotionally charged. You don't want that monster to come out, you know, the grief monster to come out and take over and ruin it, like, make it even worse. And I think if it's, like, as much as possible on paper, you can sort of, like, you know, almost like hand it over to a lawyer and go, you know, don't let me go crazy. Here's what's agreed, what can be done. And, you know, I think that's important because you just don't know who you're going to be or who they're going to be in a moment of divorce. People think they're going to be great. And, you know, people, we all disappoint ourselves, you know.
life changes. Things happen.
When cheated, then you become like go really crazy, you know, like it's all this stuff. And
it's just so many unexpected. I mean, I just explained to a couple that I did do a prenuptial for that they agreed that should they divorce, neither one of them would get what we call it maintenance now, but it's spousal maintenance or alimony. Mm-hmm. But I had to explain to them that if they're together 20 years and they end up with three children and someone gives up a career to raise those children, then that part of their agreement probably won't be enforced. Because the circumstances have changed. So just be prepared that one of you who continues on with the career is going to have to pony up some money in maintenance, even though you decided 20 years prior you're going to not do that. You know, so those agreements usually stand up. However, when circumstances really change, parts of those agreements can be invalidated by a judge. Because the idea is to keep it level. The idea is to keep somebody off of state welfare.
Yeah.
You know, we never want someone who was married and living a good life to all of a sudden become poverty stricken. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be appropriate. You know, we were talking about the main reasons also people get divorced, we said initially was money, which a prenup would cover, you know, type of thing. And there's also what we don't always talk about, what we talked about earlier, is about being dissatisfied or unfulfilled. So on that note, I don't know, have you heard of postnuptials where people...
No, I saw this on your profile, but I don't know what it is.
I wanted to talk about it because just briefly, because it's become like a hot kind of topic. A postnuptial is an agreement you enter into after you've already gotten married.
Oh, so this is after the honeymoon, basically, postnuptial.
Yes, it's after the honeymoon. Now, I'm going to tell you what I think of them. A postnuptial that is attempted to be entered into years after you've pulled the trigger on the marriage is a huge red flag.
Oh, you mean like years after you...
tied the knot.
Right, yeah. But what is a postnup? Like, could you just define that first?
For people who don't do prenuptials to separate their finances should they get a divorce, what happens sometimes in relationships, and I have done this, something goes on. Maybe somebody steps outside the marriage. There's some hint of something happening, and the couple is not ready to divorce. But the more moneyed spouse or the spouse that's working harder says, well, you know what? Since you're really not sure if you still want to be with me, I want to do a postnuptial agreement, meaning we're going to do an agreement now, even though we're married and have been married, you could have 10 years. We're going to do an agreement now that says, should we get a divorce? This is what our divorce is going to be and what it's going to look like.
So, yeah, I guess the postnup, it almost sounds like that's like, you know, when you say we're on a break or we like a trial separation. Instead of like, it could be a good thing or it could be, but I feel like it's even more charged because it's kind of saying, I want to make sure you're not going to steal from me.
It's exactly what you're saying. And I feel that a post-nuptial agreement is truly the beginning of the end of the marriage. It's over. I feel that if you wanted to do a prenuptial before you got married, and let's just say for timing's sake, you didn't execute it before you actually walked down the aisle, and then you made a decision you're going to execute it after the wedding and you do it like within 6 months,
yeah,
then I would say it's okay. But if you're married to somebody for a length of time and then they come to you with this after nuptial agreement, after wedding agreement, I think you have to ask yourself why they're really asking you to enter into that, because they're clearly up to something.
I think it's definitely offensive if someone comes up and like, it's almost like a pre-divorce settlement.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it feels really weird. And actually, I wonder, you know, obviously, because you're based in the US, so I'm assuming like all of this is definitely very like US kind of based information, right? Like how it works.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I know like not all countries, I mean, I had a friend who got divorced a couple of years back. And I think whether they had a prenup or whether they had one or not, I remember her saying to me that she said that in England, a prenup is, a lawyer said to her, the prenup is as worth as the piece of paper it was written on. Like, it's basically worth nothing, apparently. That's what she said to me. But, like, obviously, I think different countries are going to have different rules.
Of
and like
course.
You said, I think everywhere in the world, a judge will also decide whether it's enforceable or not. It's like any contracts that you sign.
Sure.
If you ever go to court, then the judge will be able to see that as being unreasonable. And so you kind of have to leave a bit of room to breathe. But, yeah. Because love and marriage is not reasonable. I mean, emotions, you can't really reason necessarily with emotions, right? Like, you love someone, you go, I don't know why, I just love them. You know, you could list a list, but that's not really why you love them. You know, you can, I think if someone lists out and go, oh, I like her because she's got a great job and, you know, she's so, she's polite. And, you know, those are all external material things. Like, you love someone for something
Correct.
Almost like undefinable sometimes. Yeah, there are qualities and values, but what makes you, like you were saying something earlier about, you know, you just knew there was something, like there was almost like an unspoken
yes
thing between you and your husband, like your now husband. And I think there's a lot to say about that. So I think sometimes, you know, there is no set recipe. It's just this that unquantifiable thing, right?
Yes. I feel like love is such a deep-rooted feeling. You know it for yourself and for everyone. There's all kinds of love and all levels of love, which you learn as you go through life. And you love your friends one way. You might love your parents another way. You know, if you have a pet, you love your pet. If you have a child, you know, they talk about unconditional love for your child. You know, you have a partner. And maybe they're the father or mother of your children. You have a different type of love and respect for that. And I think that when people get together, other than love, there has to be a respect. One that you obviously have for yourself and your needs, your wants, your wishes, but a respect that you have for the partner that's in your life and what you share. You know, it's not something you can put on social media and show the rest of the world. What you share is very unique and really very private.
I do find it always a little bit, how do you call it? What's the word? Suspicious when the overly, I mean, unless it's part of your job, let's say you are a
yes.
love coach or a love therapist or whatever it is, but like love is part of love, dating and sex is part of your business, then it makes sense that you'd post things around those topics and that you get a bit personal around it if you wanted to. Not that it's necessarily that you have to, but mm-hmm. it makes sense. It's like if you're a fitness guru, it makes sense that you're showing off your six abs or whatever, you know. But if
yes.
you're not and you're trying to sell creams, it is weird, you know. Like, so I think it's like, I mean, you know, live your truth, but I find it's weird. So I think it's so, what I was trying to say is that like, what, it's always a bit suspicious when people are overly oversharing their oh, you know, I can't, you know, that's my soulmate and I love you so much, baby. Happy birthday. And there's this long love letter. And I'm like, you can tell it to me. Why don't you tell it in private? It's just weird. It's like a bit, and they're always so happy and they're kissy, kissy. And maybe I'm just jealous and cynical. But I don't feel, I don't know. I feel like when I'm, especially when I'm extra happy, I tend to keep my private life probably even a bit more private.
I couldn't agree with you more. I don't think you're cynical. Unless you're famous, like a celebrity, and that's your role and your job, to be out there in the public eye. I often wonder, and I do write about this in my book, why people think what they show the outside world is what people should accept as being a truth. If you're truly in love with someone, where you have the time to constantly share, where you're having dinner, where you're going on vacation, what gifts you're being bought, like, what is the purpose behind that? Are you trying to make yourself feel better or justify your relationship? Or do you feel like you're trying to prove something to other people? Like, look how great my life is, or how wonderful I am. And I always have told this to my own son, never judge a book by its cover.
Correct. Correct.
Because covers are meant to entice you and draw you in. But you might find when you start to turn their pages, there isn't really much between the covers.
To me, it feels like they're convincing themselves. They're trying to convince themselves how much they're in love and happy. And it's like, not buying it.
Or they want their friends, or maybe, you know, maybe growing up in their childhood, maybe they weren't as popular as they thought they should have been. And they want everyone to see how great their life is. Or
they're trying to make an ex jealous, you know, or someone that, you know what I mean?
Maybe. Like,
I mean, there's tons of reasons why people post, you know?
I feel when you have something that special, you don't want to let outsiders into that world of yours. It's private, it's beautiful, and you want to keep all the negative naysayers out. You don't have to tell the world. You know, I really do, and I don't want to sound cliche, but I do feel it's better to love and have lost than never have loved at all. And I feel that love fills up your soul and brings beauty into your life. And it's really what you make of it. I mean, if you're with someone that's not kind to you, don't be with them. Don't try and change them. You can't. You can only change yourself. You can only take inventory of your own behaviors and make yourself a better person. So let someone come up to your level of how you want to be treated. Lead the way. Don't bring yourself down to someone else's level, because then you'll always be settling and you won't be happy. And I mean happy in your heart, where you feel content. You know, if someone is always making you laugh and feel good about yourself, you may be onto something. Don't judge the, you know, exterior of a person. You know, they may not be as tall as you like. You know, they may not be as handsome or as pretty as you like, but you're oddly attracted to them because maybe they're smart and they're funny and they're kind. And there is an attraction there. Don't just discount what's going on, you know, and treat people the way you want to be treated. And if someone is not good to you or kind to you or misleads you, let them go. And let them go with love. You don't have to be angry about it. Not everybody we meet we're meant to be with. Some people are meant to be married for 50 years. Some are meant to be married to 5 different people. Some to 3. You know, every relationship serves a purpose. And again, some people are meant to have companions without tying the knot. What I do tell people that, you know, I give a lot of advice. I have an advice column and I tell people is don't look at like Hollywood, okay? There's a different structure going on there. If you want to be with someone and have children with someone and not tie the knot and have the benefits of a legally binding relationship like a marriage, that's great. But make sure you're able to stand on your own 2 feet.
Yeah.
say, because if you're able to do that, then, you know, maybe tying the knot isn't for you. And there's a whole host of other reasons. So I think a lot of times society in general gets caught up in what we visually see and believe about other people. And we don't really know them. We just see the images projected or what, you know, maybe being broadcast about them. We have to live our own lives. We have to be our own people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, like, because I know we were talking about money earlier. I think that, let's say, even if you are, you know, if you are with someone who can sort of take care of you, whether you're a man or a woman, doesn't matter, you know, because, you know, women now, we out there making our own money as well. I mean, I'm right, not one right. of those who are making the 6-7 figure. I just want to be clear. But, you know, the possibility is there, right? The world isn't stopping us from that anymore. So if you are with someone who can look after you, you know, amazing, you know, like that's a great karma to have, I believe, you know, it's like, that's great. Like you can actually have a great lifestyle, enjoy the nicer things, go on, you know, travel, all of that stuff. That's beautiful. And appreciate that, you know, and they're obviously doing it because you're bringing something in their life that's intangible. Like, you know, it's the connection, the love and all of the rest. Right. So, but I think like what I would have in my mind is that, let's say if that was my situation, let's say if I was with someone who had a lot more money than me, I would definitely want to be making my own money, just because it's this place of peace that you get to, that you don't, as much as they're providing so much and facilitating so much, you are not 100% financially independent on depending on them, because it's always important right. to be able to have some money there at any point. You can move out, rent a place, rent a flat, even a room, whatever it is that you can afford, but you have to be able to walk out that door if things get really bad, that you can go and protect yourself. You need to be able to provide for yourself. And I think when I was in a relationship last year and I wasn't really earning much, and the imbalance was so uncomfortable for me, and it's just not nice to be in a place where they kind of have to carry a little bit, because they have a different taste, they're at a different level in their life. And if you're not with the right person, it can create a lot of weirdness. And I think like everyone is not like that. But for me, I think I get some of my confidence through also my earning power. So if I have money coming in, I'll be a lot more, you know? So I think that even if I was with someone, that's different now, you know, now I'm making money again. But it's like, I think that would be something I would definitely want. And, you know, why not have a little saving pot? Be good at saving. If they're not letting you save money.
Well, I think, you know, a rainy day fund that's put away. And I tell this a lot. I've had a lot of women say to me, oh, but I don't want to have a separate account, you know, for my husband, because, you know, I don't think that's right and this and that. And then, you know, down the road, when they find out, which has happened, when the economy doesn't always go the way it should, the husband doesn't get the promotion, they're overextended, that had they had that money put away or kept some sort of a career going, you know, within whatever the parameters are of their life that they could, that they may have been able to save their family from the unexpected.
Yeah.
I mean, I've literally had a client who... the husband was in finance and she really wanted out of the marriage. And he kept saying, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. We can't afford it if we split up. He was controlling the money. She did go back to school though, while they were still married. And I will tell you, with all the vacations and all the spending, she got a knock on the door one day in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and it was the bank foreclosing on their house.
Well, that's it. If you don't know what's happening, anything like that can happen.
Right. And what I try to point out is, if you do have money set aside, you know, great. You know, you can share it down the road with your spouse, or you could just keep it. You can give it to a child. Or if something comes up that's unexpected, you know, your spouse loses a job, the pandemic, you know, who knows? Then you now can contribute to the households in a way that you wouldn't have been able to had you not kept that, you know, ongoing, you know, ability to earn.
Right, exactly. And let's say if that, you know, even those earnings, you know, let's say if it wasn't necessarily for like that knock on the door, you know, the bailiffs.
Right. Which no one should get.
It's awful. Yeah. But like that could also be for like, you know, a saving for the pension, you know, like for the old age.
Sure.
Saving for a holiday home or whatever it is. Like, it could actually be one person is funding the everyday and the other person is actually saving for the future. I mean, there's so much that can be done if you're both earning, and it doesn't have to be the same amount. But effectively, if you have some money that you can invest for long term, the return are going to be a lot more than what you have them leaving in the bank, right? So there's never really a downside to be earning money, I'd imagine. Not in a capitalistic world, right? I mean, it's...
Right. I also feel very strongly that if you're going to break up a relationship in a marriage, you should do it from a position of strength and not weakness and fear. So if you have your own money, even if it's not as much as your spouse, you won't be so fearful.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of people stay because of the money.
Yes, because they can't afford to leave. I mean, in my practice, I can say that women leave when they have money, men leave when they have someone else.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, a woman who really wants out, if she has her own money, you're not stopping her. She's leaving.
Correct. Yeah, that's true.
She's leaving. But, you know, and again, it could be a primary parent. It doesn't necessarily have to be the woman, but the parent that gives up the earning capacity, who really is reliant on their partner, is going to be feeling very trapped and very reluctant to have that relationship broken up unless their financial needs are going to be met so they can survive and move on.
Or that they meet someone else with money.
Right? Yeah, that's not always so easy.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, you know, it's not unseen, unheard of, you know, people leaving a marriage and moving straight to the boyfriend or girlfriend's house.
Sure. And that usually ends. If you're going from one to the other usually doesn't last. Eventually that will end too.
Yeah. I guess like what I want to ask you two things before we sort of like round up the episode. There was like there's so many good stuff that you've said and I really appreciate it. I feel like I would be amiss if I didn't ask you about because now we see that we're hearing about the woman being the main financial provider, and so when there's a separation, a divorce, that she's the one who has to give up part of her wealth and alimony. So is that, or those things, I know you're based in the States, so we're going to go with the States situation, okay. Right? But like, is it the same? Like, do the men get the same as what the women get in a divorce?
Yeah.
If they're the main provider,
yes.
Right? Because that it goes both ways, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and sometimes the women, they just don't get it. I'm like, I'm sorry, you were the, you know, wage earner, your spouse stayed at home, happened to be the husband, raised the children, you wanted to wear the pants in the family, so you're wearing the pants.
Yeah, there's so many women out there being really loud about, oh, I retired my husband. I'm like, yeah, well, if he divorces you, be ready to pay off.
Right, and they do, they will have to pay up. If their incomes are such a disparity, it doesn't matter if you're the man or the woman, the moneyed spouse, which is, I guess, a better way to say it, the moneyed spouse is going to be obligated to pay the non-moneyed spouse.
Well, that's it. Like, so let's say if you have a career, like as a woman, you know, if you can work online and you can travel the world, obviously, like, you know, before pandemic and hopefully soon again. But like, you know, let's say if you can work from anywhere or you have to travel for work. So that's probably a better example. If you're constantly having to travel for work and you want your spouse to be there with you or your partner, even your boyfriend, if you have a boyfriend of 10 years, if I had a boyfriend of 10 years and I'm out there traveling and I'm, you know, for work and I want him to be with me, I would expect that when we break up, I'm going to have to compensate him for it, even if we're not married. And I know it sounds really strange because I'm the woman, but I feel like if that person gave up and that we agreed to, not because he wanted to munch on my money, but, you know, like if it's an agreement and it's a real relationship, effectively, like he's given up his career potential. I mean, he's probably met loads of people maybe through me, I'm thinking like, you know, the J-Lo's of this world, right? Like those people, you know, when they have to constantly travel, if they meet a regular guy, the regular guy is probably going to have to follow, like Kathy Griffin's husband, I'm imagining. Is, you know,
well,
so it goes two ways, right?
Well, here in the States, if you're not married, your claim to money, unless you live in one of the states that recognizes what's called common law marriage, where you're not married with a piece of paper, like a legal piece of paper, and after a certain amount of time, they would consider you a husband and wife.
That's if you live together, right?
Right, but that's only in some states. Mm. Like in the state of New York, we do not recognize common law marriage. So if you're just, if you're merely a boyfriend or girlfriend and you gave up something, you really don't have a legal right to the other person's income, which is also why I feel that you find a lot of famous, wealthy people get married a lot because someone is giving something up to be with them and just to be someone's, you know, boyfriend running around a country, you know, the world with them would be giving up too much. But if you're going to be with somebody long term and you're not going to tie the knot, you might find at the end of the day, you're not really entitled to what you think you are.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, depending on which country, I think there's some places where if you live with someone, I think there's like the 10-year rule. After 10 years.
Yeah, it's a common law marriage.
Is that what that is? Yeah, okay. So after 10, but that's still a long stretch, right? Let's say for, because even if you give up your career for 5 years, it's hard to go back into the market. So
it's very,
that's
very
why we
hard.
Have to be savvy. Boyfriend, that, you know, that's it, because I do actually think that, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, it doesn't really mean much. Well, it doesn't mean anything in the eyes of the law. It does not mean anything in the eyes of religion. It doesn't mean anything. If something happens to your boyfriend or girlfriend and they end up in the ICU and it's only family, guess what? You're not family. You may have been with them for a long time. And that's the thing that's like people, I think, sometimes forget is that, you know, marriage is not just about a piece of paper.
Right. There's more benefits afforded you if you're married. In the United States, we also have a thing called domestic partnerships. That's really, it really was for same-sex couples, but now it's afforded to heterosexual couples over the age of 62 who have lived together, have joint expenses. They've been together for at least 2 years or more, and they have health care they want to share and things like that. But it's not the same as being legally married where you would share in other benefits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're going to be somebody else's significant other without tying the knot, then I would say that you should have a significant savings. Yeah. Or you could have a contract with your boyfriend or girlfriend or some other arrangement that you are compensated for giving up a career. So I always tell people, you know, if you were really good at marketing in the, you know, real world, if you're able to take those skills and evolve it into something that you could do on the road so you can travel, then do it and be with, you know, keep yourself in the loop, take all your skills and try and turn it into something else that keeps you current so that if you do split up, and this is not the marriage, but even if you are married, this is also a good tip. You know, you're in it. You're able to secure yourself other employment and move forward in a career. So,
but that's,
you know,
it, because it's like you have to always think, like, if you are not with that person, what do you have? Like, if your life always revolves around the other person, whether you're married or not, then that's a problem, because you're kind of almost shooting yourself in the foot, not only just for the relationship, the quality of the dynamic, but also for afterwards or just everything. It's like, you know, I think it's definitely important to keep in mind to always have your life, do your thing. And I think that's why, like, you know, choosing a partner is really important, to have someone who's supportive of you, you know, not someone who asks you to quit what you do because they don't, you know, they feel a certain kind of way. Like, anyone who wants to stop you in your evolution and your dream, you know, unless you're actually out there putting yourself at risk physical every day, I don't know, there has to be a very good reason for someone to because asking someone to quit their passion, or let's say a podcast, however, is very different to asking someone, to wanting someone to quit smoking. It's not the same thing, you know. It's like
it's definitely not the same thing. And I would say that hopefully you are with someone that will say, let's think of a way to continue, help you continue that while we go on this other journey together. You know, recognizing your partner's dreams is very important, because as you do get older, you really do come to understand you really have only one life to live.
Yeah.
And you do want to share it. And if you're with someone that understands that concept, then together you can help each other realize your goals and dreams. And if it requires getting on the road and traveling the world, then you come up with a plan to help the other person continue with their podcasts from wherever it is in the world. You know, you find the equipment that you need that you can travel with so that you're both still fulfilling what makes you tick.
Exactly.
Other than each other.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, you know, because it, like you said earlier, like, you know, best friends, you're supposed to be best friends. So why would you not want to help your, be supportive and excited, even if you don't get it, why they do what they do, right? You don't have to understand. Right. You just have to just acknowledge that that's something that's real for them and they love it.
And it'll make it, it'll make them better for you.
But that's it. That's it. It's a win-win situation. And correct. So I guess, like, to round up, like, is there, are there anything, like, you know, in your career that you've seen that you go, do you know what, that person could have avoided a divorce or something? Is there anything, like, you sort of can say people as a caring warning, look, if this is what's happening, like, and you want this to succeed, you need to think about XYZ. Like, are there any, like, saves that you can, you've seen people not take, they've not taken the opportunity to save their relationship and they ended up really heartbroken with a divorce?
I'm gonna say that that's one, first of all, it's a very good question. And yes, many, many, many times. I think that we, as a society, sometimes fall into either societal norms of the past, or we're trying to find a way in the future, and we get stuck in a routine, let's say. And when we're starting to feel restless, dissatisfied, or unhappy in our lives, you know, we look for the little things to pick on, maybe with our partners, because it's really not about them at this point. And we're not truly honest with ourselves. And when you're not honest with yourself, you can't really discuss it with your significant other. And I think sticking your head in the sand and not approaching head on with open communication and love, not finger pointing and blame, okay? Because two people are responsible. Mm-hmm. Two to tango, two to love, two to fight. I go for the love. You know, you find the right time and place to say to your partner, hey, I'm feeling this way. You know, do you notice that? Maybe it's about the money coming into the household. Maybe I feel that I'm being left out of important decisions. Maybe the children are older and now I want to go back to school, but you're sort of telling me I really shouldn't. You know, I feel that people stop communicating and they start telling themselves stories they want to hear to justify why they're not talking to their spouse. Mm. And they could avoid the inevitable hurt and pain by just finding the right time, the right moment, and the words, which will not be perfect, as long as they're said with love, to say, hey, we've got an issue here and I need help sorting it out. You know, before it grows into something it never needs to be. Now, sometimes people just grow apart. And that happens. You know, if your spouse is a big golfer and you can't stand that they're gone like all weekends, that could end up driving you apart. Unless you look at it as a time for you to be with your friends and do the things you love and realize when they come back to you, they're so much happier and in a better place because they've done something they love.
And same for you. You've been catching up with your friends. And it's, yeah, it's...
Exactly. Or maybe it's yoga or Pilates or meditation or, I don't know, maybe it's just shopping and retail therapy, whatever it is. You know, it's not... You have to be able to allow your partner to grow as you want to grow. And I find that the couples that end up breaking up, and it's really heartbreaking, it's because they refuse to let go and allow their partner to live and grow up, and they will grow up with you. And I'm not going to say that there isn't going to be some uncomfortable moments. There will be, but that's part of growth.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think people expect it to be so lovely and rosy and easy if it's meant to be. And the thing is, no, you're making it meant to be. You're making it be when you actually, you know, work on yourself, make sure that you are doing what it takes. It doesn't just happen. Like, I don't think a relationship is a happy relationship just because you just let it, you don't do anything. Like, it's like, you know, it's very cliche, like, you know, watering that plant, like, you know, or right. that flower, whatever it is, like, it doesn't just, if you just leave it in the sun, it's going to dry up and, you know, and that's it.
And die. And
I think, you know, I think that's why, like, it's always so annoying. Let's say if you bring, so, you know, let's say if you have, you know, some arguments with someone that you're dating, and then they always say, oh, well, if it was meant to be, we wouldn't be arguing. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, we're getting to know each other.
No, that's not true.
No, I agree. It's complete, you know, BS.
Argument is growth. Sometimes a really good argument helps you really, like, break through to the next level. You know, your relationship is not going to end because you have an argument. Then you're not really in a truly committed relationship. You can have an argument. It could be about, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be about the two of you. It could be about, you know, how you feel about, you know, climate change, for example. You know, you can, and it can bring you to the next level and it can raise awareness. I feel that if you look at how people try to succeed in their careers and how much they put into climbing up the corporate ladder, if those people would put the same amount of effort into their relationships, right? They'd be the CEO. They'll be the CEO of you know, of love, exactly. And I feel that, you know, you have to have that balance. Like, if you put it all into the economics and you don't put it into the love, well, the love is going to be the little plant that doesn't grow.
Right, exactly, and I think because I don't like confrontation. I don't like arguments, you know, stuff like that. But
me
neither. You know, because it makes me sick to my stomach. But what makes it really worse and then makes me disengage eventually is when we have them and then the person is like, what if it's meant to be? We wouldn't, you know, we would just, it would be easy all the time. And I'm like, oh, now I really feel like a piece of shit. There's like, but it actually has nothing to do with that. It's just like, it's just, you know, it, different people look at things differently, right? So, but yeah, I think if you have a, you know, it doesn't have to be dramatic just because you have an argument. It could just be, you know, just talking it out.
A difference of opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for sharing all your insights. I know, you know, you've been a lawyer for 30 years. So, you know, I know all of the things that you say is like, you know, golden. And I love to see that you've been in that business and not come out cynical. And it's like, it's you know, it's really, you know, it's kind of, it helps me to check myself. So to check myself a little bit, because I can be quite, I am actually a bit cynical about relationships, not for others, but for me. So I think it's a good thing to see someone who, you know, who's approached it very different, in a very different way to me, and not let things, outside things, sort of influence their, you know, their choices in love. So I think that's really, really great. And I thank you for that. And so I want to finish this by asking the two questions I ask every single one of my guests. And the first one is, why did you wish you'd realized, but like on a cellular level, right? Not just know cognitively, but like, what do you wish you'd realized, really understood at 18?
I really wished I understood at 18 that love came in all forms and all types of love can exist in your life. And it didn't just have to be that one intense first love moment all the time.
Yeah, to be comfortable in the mundane before it, because it comes back eventually. It comes back in a nice wave of a bit more excitement again. Is that?
I just feel that, you know, when you're really young and you have that first love and in your life, which is super intense, and you're planning the wedding and you're like all of 16 and 17 years old and it doesn't always work out for whatever the reasons are, you're crushed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're just crushed. And I want people out there to know that you will have love in your life. Always. There's love of self, love of others, and those who love you. And not everyone will love you the same way, but take it all in. Enjoy the love that comes into your life and enjoy the love you give out. I just feel that it's so important to understand that you can't, like, it's like not putting a price tag on love. Don't hold love up to some parameter. Oh, love always has to be a 10 or a 2. You know, a love can be like a meal. Sometimes you get an appetizer or an aperitif. Sometimes you get an entree, and sometimes you just get a dessert. And it's all good.
Yeah.
And it all adds to your life in a good way. So I wish at 18 I had known that, because then I maybe wouldn't have spent, you know, time being sad over loss or crying or, you know, being a young girl feeling like I might not be loved. Type of thing, and this is really great,
and I think like when you said that, it made me think of, you know, really sort of being cognizant as an adult of what, because you know, like you, because I think like growing up, I was always really, I always knew I was very lucky, and I really appreciated, you know, I, for me, my biggest fear was that a war would start, right? So I knew that having a roof. I knew that having food, like a fridge full of food, there was never lacking food in the flat. You know, my mom who's there for me, like I knew I was lucky. I knew I was like taken care of in that sense, right? So I had hobbies, all of this stuff. But I think as an adult, I sort of forgetting that. And I felt like, oh, I should be in a different place. I should be further down the line in the success journey I had mapped in my mind, right? Financial, career, all of that stuff. And when I was hearing you say that, it made me think of like so much change for me internally, just internally, this peace inside for many different things, or probably therapy and all of that. But like there's a, something that's very, very important for me is to just realize that, do you know what? I'm grateful I can make a cup of tea. I'm grateful for the food in my fridge. I'm grateful I have a fridge. I'm grateful if I can turn on the light, I can put on the heating. Everything is here to support me. The chair I'm sitting on is supporting my bum. The, you know, the plants in the windowsill is giving me a nice view. Yes, I may be living in a small place, and yes, maybe I want to have a dog. All of this stuff, there's always, but it's that thing of like actually that feeling of being supported, protected, whether it's me doing that for me or, you know, God or whatever it is that you believe in, right? Whatever your belief system is. But there is the fact that we are out here breathing every single day and you have this body doing a million things for you every second. It is incredible. It's an incredible gift, really. Not to be flippant over, you know, suffering and things like that. But if there is a thing that you can, you know, look at, it's there's all these little things. It's like, oh, I can put lemons in my water. You know, some people can't do that. Some people don't have running water. Some people don't have electricity. Like there's always something to be really grateful for. It doesn't mean you can't achieve for more, but that place of peace, it makes such a big difference.
Yes. Being grateful for what you have and not what you don't.
Exactly. Exactly. And so the second question that I ask all my guests is, what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
I don't put up with people who are not grateful for what they have and always are looking for what they don't have. And I don't put up with the negative, the people that say, I can't, I won't, I don't. I don't have time for that in my life. I believe in surrounding yourself with people who fill you up, who build you up, who help you grow, who believe in you and love you. I don't believe in surrounding myself with people who are always looking to drag you down, give you their criticism of you in a negative way or unhelpful way. I don't have time for that anymore. I think when we're younger, you know, we take to heart the criticisms of others that are very hurtful. And also, we don't understand that they're coming from a negative place within the other person or a jealous place or an envious place. So I don't have time for any of that in my life. I surround myself with people who are like-minded and who are looking to constantly evolve and grow and be better in their own lives, you know, whether it's better parents, better at work, better in love, better in relationships, better friend. I find that, you know, if you bring all that beauty and love into your life, then that's what you're going to have.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's also because you're at that level, right? You understand that your happiness isn't cheap. You're not going to let someone cheapen it by trying ruin it, or, you know, you're not going to give that opportunity to others. I think even for myself, I think I realized years ago, I was that person's like, oh, I can't, I don't, I should, you know, and all of a sudden I was like, wait, I've said this way too much. I'm tired of hearing myself. And it really is. And now I realize as well, like, I don't really want to be around that kind of energy. Like, you know, we all have bad days, but there's some people that are just really energy vampires. So they're just going to suck it out of you by how they're down is going to bring you down. And it's just not worth it anymore, because life is too short. Like, you know, it doesn't mean you're not there for them. It's just that, you know, I mean, you were talking, you know, like, there's people who are always out there to try and bring you down, or they're so negative, and it's just too much.
100%.
Too much.
100%. And it's motivated by an insecurity or self-loathing of the other person. And it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks.
No, it doesn't.
Of you. You have to be able to put your head on the pillow at night and rest within yourself and be with yourself and know that you've done the best you can do in your life, you know, with your family, your children, your love life, your partner. And if you've done your best, then no one can ask more of you.
And you know, it's funny because it can be really difficult. It's such a daily reminder. Like, you know, if you're on social media and you post something that, like the other day I was posting something because someone was looking for a freelancer. And everyone was glad, and you know, there's people who are interested. And then there's one person. That's the one person that stood out for me. She was like, "Ah, the rate is not good." You know, she was very like, the rate was actually, I thought, was a good rate, but she was being all negative. And I thought, and I realized, why am I obsessing about that one comment? Forget it. Like, right. If it's just, right. It's just fine. It's not for her, but that rate is not for everybody. Like, if you have 20 years experience, yeah, that's not going to be for you. But if you're at university, it's going to be a great opportunity. So it's like, you know, and I was like, why is she even trying to discuss with me? It's not even, I'm doing this for someone else. I'm helping. I was just like, why am I even, and I caught myself going, why, don't sweat it. Don't sweat it. I don't even know her. Yeah. I don't even know the woman.
Look, I have it too. I'm out there on social media, and I've had people comment on the fact that I married my husband in 4 months and we're together 24 years. But you know what I say to that? You don't know the work that went into this relationship to be here for 24 years and thriving.
Oh, because do they say, oh, you don't know what it's like to be out here? Or is that what they say? Like,
something like that. Or like, you know, like, oh, good for you. Like, it was a flip comment, and I ignore it. So, and
as you should, as you should, because people don't know. Everyone has opinions out there. Opinions are cheap. You know, it's really running our mouth is we can do that for free. And that's the thing. Yeah, no, but that's the thing I had to learn.
I like that.
You know, yeah, run your mouth all you want. Look, at least they're talking, you know. It's like, I don't know. It's just, it's so cheap and easy. And it's like, if it's not actually, if you don't know me, you don't even know what you're talking about. Like, if you're just having an opinion based on one post or something, I'm like, well, good for you that you have psychic ability, that you know everything behind every word. Good for you. Good for you that you're so certain. Be grateful and leave everyone else alone, because, you know, we don't care. You know, it's just,
right.
Or we're trying not to care, because obviously I was thinking about it, but I had to go, oh, wait, why am I even sweating it? Like, it's not even, and actually, it wasn't even really negative. It was actually quite something that was valuable, which she was saying. I was like, actually, that's good to keep in mind. But she had to write it several places in the comments. I was like, okay, I've read it. It's fine. Like, can we just, you know? I was like,
right. And she could have private messaged you too, you know?
Well, but that would have been, you know, she wouldn't have had her moment of shine, you know. So, you know, that, you know, that's how sometimes, you know, how it is on social media. But it's, so I want to ask you, Leslie, like, where, because I know you've got a book, you've got all things, and I just want to know, like, please tell us, like, where can people find you? How can they work with you? I don't know if you do anything like online consulting, you know, if people are somewhere they can reach you, like, how, like, plug all the stuff. How can people find and work with you?
So you can go to my website at askleslythelawyer.com. I have a lot of free information and advice there about love, money, marriage, that you might find very useful. You can reach me through AskLeslieTheLawyer.com. You can send me a submit in an email, and I will definitely get back to you. I do work with people online, and I do consulting. You can also read a lot about what we've talked about today in my book called The Cult of the Black Card. It's on Amazon. Yes, it's about appearances. It'll also give you an insight into how I got where I did in my career and how I evolved into helping mostly women and sometimes men to see the reality of life through my life. And I use the cult of the black card because it's the American Express black card that at one time was a myth. And people are always judging people by the cars they drive, the bags, the pocketbooks they carry, the clothes they wear, the size of the ring on their finger, and sometimes by the credit card they also use. And I think that it's a very enjoyable read. It's full of joy, love, hope, and perseverance. And I'm talking a lot about it because I've had people from all over the world, men and women, write me, ages 17 to 80, telling me that they related to the stories in the book. And reach out. I'm on social media. And reach out on my website because I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, you know, this is great. I love that you have that as the name of your book because it is true. You know, like I feel like sometimes people think that just because people are wearing big names, you know, Chanel and all that, and they have fancy credit cards, fancy cars, they automatically think that people has a lot of money. And often, I feel like the actual, this is like a different conversation, but I do feel that actually people with real money, you can't tell. And I think one of the reasons is that, you know, you don't want to look like a mugger's delight. Like one of the reasons why I can't, you know, I'm not out there buying, you know, Chanel. I can't afford a Chanel bag. But let's say if I could, I'm reluctant if it shows that you can see what the brand is because I don't want to look like a mugger's delight. I don't want to be out there broadcasting, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really a dangerous game to play because, you know, or to think that, you know, people, you know, they think, oh yeah, that person has loads of money, so I'm going to chip in, you know, I'm going to invest in their business just because they're driving a Maserati and stuff like that. They think, oh, they've made it. But you don't really know. They may have rented that car for the day and now they can't buy food for a week. Like, you have no idea what's going on, right? It's like smoking mirrors. I used to work at like in events, and I was one time it was like, you know, basically helping promote like, you know, yachts. And so there was, you know, we were as girls on this yacht, and these were like, you know, the yachts I was on was like a £12 million yacht, and that's without paying for all the salaries. And it's at least $100,000 just to pay for the two pilots or whatever you call them to drive that yacht, and then you have the cleaners. I mean, it's a big expense. The people who would come on, it was appointments only. I would never even think they could afford a BMW by the look of them. Like, it doesn't, you can't read it by looking at them. They look really normal, just jeans, t-shirt, trainers. The wife also very, just nothing. Like, honestly, you wouldn't pick them out of a lineup. Like, it literally, they blend in. The only time they didn't blend in was like this one guy, he had his own entourage, but that's part of his culture. And actually he was super, super nice, super polite, very humble. But, you know, like there was none of that thing that we see a lot on the TV and stuff. And the jobs they do, for those that the salesmen knew about, some of them did have no idea what they do, but they were very like random, you know, nothing glamorous. One of them, he, you know, the waste management, there's like in England, there's like these big container bins with like a name on it, and you don't notice it. Well, until this guy says, well, the guy who owns that, you know, that company, yeah, he has one of our yachts. And the other one is to do with ink cartridges. I mean, really random, you know, nothing glamorous. Sure. Yeah, yeah, but they have real money. It's real money.
Yes, it's, I call it wealth. Wealth whispers, money talks.
Wow, 100%. Absolutely.
And I, especially in the world of matrimony and divorce and where I practice, it's wealthy suburbs. However, the competition and the keeping up with the Joneses has driven a lot of people who do not have that kind of extraordinary wealth to look like they do. But yet, when they come to my office and they actually bring the bank statements, it's heartbreaking because instead of the money being in the bank, it's
on them,
on their clothing or in their car. And it's so sad because it's money. Who are you impressing? Your neighbor, the woman at the PTA, some other mothers, you know, or parents. I mean, at the end of the day, the money belongs to your family. And if you have that need to make other people think that you're better because you're carrying a Chanel bag that you bought on a credit card, I mean, what does that really say about who you are?
Yeah. But it's just, there's so many things going on, right? But this is why it's so important not to believe the smoking mirrors. And you just don't know. You just don't know. So I want to say, look, thank you so much, Leslie. And, you know, I really encourage, I encourage you to go out and, go to Leslie's website, check out her book. And it's been such a great pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom nuggets and spending this time with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Angie. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you today.
And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com or come and find me on Instagram at Tool for Dish It Podcast. See you next week. And until then,
use in health. Inappropriately.